You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Wednesday, 18th September. We've got local CPI this morning and then, of course, FOMC rate decision tonight. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Kamla Mapawani, our insurance results. A good set of numbers and a special dividend. But if they did a special dividend last year as well, it's just no longer so special. Johan Els from Old Mutual, as central bankers start the rate cutting cycle. Eugene Buerta from Momentum Investments Group, shrinking JSE. How worried should we be? The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb: stop the two-pot hypocrisy, permission to speak freely, please. Craig Gradage, by Craig Gradage, a very good read. Business Day: consumer confidence recovers to five-year highs. Wild what a little bit of electricity does to confidence. Morning markets: US was green, but not by much. S&P up 0.03, Nasdaq 0.05. The East is green, with Sydney up 0.3%, Turkey up 0.7%, Hong Kong 1.4% higher, and Tencent up 0.33%. Commodities mixed. Gold, 2,602. Brent green, 7,340. Platinum, 983. Palladium green, $1,115 an ounce. Rand is 17.58. Bitcoin, 60,500. Top 40 opening call, expecting a red open, 270 points, or about just over 0.33% lower.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Kamla Mapawani, independent analyst. Kamla, appreciate the early morning time. The insurance results, I suppose, I mean, the share price told us the story as it trades up at all-time highs. Had a good day on the JSE yesterday. Looking good sort of across the way. I mean, there's always risks, short-term insurers, fires, floods and the like. But a good set of numbers. And as I said in the intro, another special dividend, albeit this one a little bit chunkier.
Yes, absolutely. You know, I always smile when I see the positive stories when we chat, and there was a few and far between. Mm-hmm. So quite good. And as you said, the special divvy, last year they had a special divvy of about 8.5 cents per share, and this year it's up to 40 cents per share. So yes, maybe not too special, but special enough, I think. adding on to that, I mean, we've discussed these investment holding companies before, and we know that OUTsurance has come out of that RMI stable. But it's yielding what it's supposed to yield. The shareholders are now getting the value that they weren't getting while it was being held by RMI. So it definitely sounds like it was the correct move. I think very prudent in terms of having a special dividend as opposed to change the actual dividend policy. So very cautious on that side. So you know, kudos to management. But other than that, as you've mentioned, you know, they seem to be doing really well on the normalized earnings, up 20.3%. The strategy that they've mentioned yesterday for the last 5 years is now yielding the positive earnings growth that they were hoping for.
A good set of numbers, and I really, your point around the special dividend, I take that. I hadn't thought of that. My only perhaps concern, really good results, maybe a little expensive. I mean, price earnings maybe not the best metric for short-term insurers, but I mean, it's sitting on plus 20 PEs. Is it maybe getting a little bit rich after what's been quite a significant move in the last couple of months?
In my opinion, it's definitely got to look at what the earnings are going forward. As you've mentioned, the PE at the moment is in the early 20s, so mm-hmm. that is quite high. Divvy yield only at 3%, and that is also, you know, on the back of this special divvy and et cetera. So it does look like it's rich, but you've got to also ask the question, or beg the question, you know, what other opportunities are there for investors at this point? So it may look rich if you are in it. It depends on, you know, how you want to get out. But my opinion is go back to the fundamentals, look at the numbers. The PE might be hiding something. So don't just shoot from the hip effectively.
I take your point on that. It might be hiding something. And of course, that what it is hiding is perhaps Ireland. And it comes back to they've got enough money to A, fund Ireland, and B, do dividends. I mean, they've got cash. So the PE is always backward looking. It is forward looking. And Ireland has good potential, maybe.
Exactly. And Ireland's still very, very new in the group. May 2024 was the acquisition. They've done a significant amount. They've taken a big loss in terms of setup costs.
Yeah.
So as you've said, you know, the turnaround, but once we've ramped up there, you may see that PE come down to reasonable levels.
Yeah, Ireland cost them 180 million, but it is, as you say, startup, there will be costs and time that reverses and we start getting the profits. We'll leave it there. Kamran Mepoani, independent analyst, appreciate the early morning time.
MoneyWeb now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
I'm chatting with Johan Els, Old Mutual Group Chief Economist. Johan, an exciting week for us monetary nerds, I suppose. We've got FOMC Wednesday. We've got MPC Thursday. Both are expected to cut. Our prime's been 11.75 since May 2023. But inflation's come down. I mean, we've got July CPI 4.6. We've got August due on Wednesday. It really is time. And I think the question has moved from will they to how big, perhaps?
Absolutely. Starting off with the FOMC Wednesday, I think that'll give us a good lead. Mm-hmm. I think the US might cut by 50 basis points, given the risk of the US economy slipping into recession and the fast slowing inflation there. But as you say, more exciting for us South Africans, what the Reserve Bank will do the next day. And I think conservative central bankers, like they are, I'm not complaining about that. That's good. They will likely only cut by 25 basis points. But that's a good start. It's, in my mind, perhaps overdue. We should have done that in July. Underlying inflation is slowing far faster than what the year-on-year rate suggests. So it is time, as you say. It is time.
You make the point in a note you put out that, you know, yes, there are concerns about inflation, but I mean, October could be sub 4% for our local inflation, which comes to the point, it really is time.
Yeah, absolutely. If you look at the petrol price decreases we've seen and still coming in October. And as you say, then I expect October inflation to be pretty close to 3.5, given the petrol price cut that's still coming. But some people might say, hang on, that's only petrol. But as I said earlier, the underlying pace of inflation has slowed quite significantly in the shorter term. On that basis, headline inflation sits at 1.1% the last 3 months, and core inflation sits at 2.8%, below 3% the last 3 months. And consumer inflation, especially if you look at consumer goods, mm-hmm. the weighted average of clothing, footwear, furniture, appliances, vehicles, that's 2.6%. So it's not only petrol that forces headline down. There's absolutely no inflationary pressure at the moment.
So two questions. The first is, do we then perhaps get a 50-point cut in November?
Absolutely. That's my thinking exactly. Especially if by November, our meeting in November is late November, after the Fed's meeting. And if the Fed has then cut twice by 50 and 50, which mm-hmm. seems very probable, then with our own inflation sitting around 3.5%, I think there's some catch-up to be doing at that point, because clearly the Reserve Bank also sit with the evidence of fast slowing inflation expectations, mm-hmm. especially those expectations by trade unions. And under those circumstances, I think the Reserve Bank will be more comfortable to cut by 50 basis points then.
The other question was, I mean, the governor, and I take your point around cautious central bankers. It's what we want from a central banker, absolutely. Mm. He always refers to inflation risk is to the upside. Is that shifting where maybe the risk is actually to the downside, or is there more nuance?
It's not always clear cut, but I think if we look at what the Rand has been doing, if we look at what the oil price has been doing, food prices have also been relatively stable, and food inflation has priced to the downside. I think the balance of risks in terms of inflation has shifted slightly to the downside, not even balanced, to the downside. And you might argue that 2 years ahead, it might shift to the upside, which might be true because mm-hmm. consumer spending will likely get some potential boost from lower inflation, lower interest rates. But we're not there yet. At the moment, I think inflation risk has shifted quite markedly to the downside.
And then where does the Reserve Bank pause this? I mean, obviously during the pandemic, we had prime as low as 7%. We're not going back to that, touch wood, assuming no more pandemics or anything. Where do you expect them to take prime down to in 2025?
Yeah, it's always data dependent, but the way I see things playing out at the moment, I think the Fed that's going to cut perhaps more aggressively than what's priced into the market will likely lead to a softer dollar exchange rate, which will help the rand. I see more potential for the rand to strengthen a bit further. So that takes away more inflation risk. Under those circumstances, then, I think, let's say the Reserve Bank cuts 75 basis points for their last two meetings this year, 25 and 50. I think there's room for another 50 to 75. So a total of perhaps 125 to 150 basis points of rate cuts in the cycle. Now, that is quite a bit of help to the consumer.
Yeah.
But as you say, they're not going back to those previous lows.
Yeah, yeah.
Not yet anyway.
And there's another issue. There's a lot of talk around how our MPC sort of can't really get too far away from the rates in the US, the currency risk, etc. If the Fed's being more aggressive, does that mean that potentially that gap between us and them will perhaps widen?
I think so, especially if you look at the rest of this year, let's say 100 to 125 for the Fed in cuts and only 75 for us. So already there you see some gap opening up. I think the Fed's got more to do next year. There's clearly quite a bit of a slowdown in the US economy coming, and then probability of slipping into recession becomes clearer. I'm not forecasting a recession, but you know, economics isn't an exact science. Yeah. So if you slow quite a bit, potential for slipping into recession. And the Fed doesn't want that. So I think the Fed is going to be slightly more aggressive. Mm-hmm. So, that gap is probably going to open up a bit, which is, again, good for the rand. Yeah. So the underlying position in SA, I think less risk going forward, that will help the rand, that will help inflation, that will help interest rates.
Yeah, and all of this helps consumers. Johan Elfs, Old Mutual Group Chief Economist, always appreciate the insights. And that's our poll today on LinkedIn and Twitter. So the Fed is today, MPC is tomorrow. I suppose the question is, I mean, what do we think the Fed will cut? I mean, is it going to be, the market is saying 0.25%. Johan there said actually it's probably going to be 0.5%. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter.
The Property Pod.
It's Tourism Month in South Africa, but how is the tourism industry doing? To get some great insights, the CEO of SA's largest hotel group joins us on the Property Pod this week. He is Marcel van Olleck, the CEO of JSE-listed Southern Sun Hotels.
The Property Pod.
MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
I'm chatting with Eugene Botha. He's head of Research Hive at Momentum Investments Group. Eugene, appreciate the time today. Listings on the JSE, number of listings on the JSE, been shrinking for some time now. You got a sense of actually just how bad it is and how many sort of listings we have lost.
Yeah, so Simon, it's an interesting discussion. And I guess the question remains whether it's good or bad for the South African economy, right? So, but maybe, you know, long story short, to start it off, is, I mean, we've seen about, you know, an average number of 12 to 13 delistings over the last couple of years. But that's not necessarily out of the ordinary, right? Because, I mean, we've seen that for a long period of time. It's really the impact of no listings on the JSE that's resulting in the shrinking, you know, investable universe on the Joburg Stock Exchange.
That is a good point. I mean, when I think about listings, I mean, there's been a couple of unbundlings, but there hasn't been a lot coming to market. Is that, I mean, you know, one of the issues could be that we're in a global world, so you know, companies could list anywhere. There's a lot more private equity and venture capital. Or is it regulation challenges?
I really do think that, you know, there's a couple of challenges facing South Africa, which we all know about. So, I mean, that really does have an impact on, you know, potential new listings. It's also quite, you know, cyclical from time to time. So it is driven by sentiment as well as the relative attractiveness of raising capital through equity or through debt, where, you know, the level of interest rates really play a role. And then I think another hindrance could be the challenges faced from a regulatory perspective to list companies on the exchange, because that can be quite burdensome, you know, as well for new listings and for new IPOs.
I know the JSE went through a process last year to try and make it easier, and it's still early days in a listing environment. But from your sense, did they look like something that could facilitate the process of more listings?
I think there's potential upside. So I mean, there's a couple of changes that's been happening on their side. The first thing is, you know, the dual class share structures. So where the JSE now allows dual class share structures, which can help companies maintain control while raising capital. The second one, which I think is probably, you know, one of the more important ones, is the financial reporting requirements. That's been simplified quite a bit to reduce the burden on the companies. And then the other one is the minimum free float for new listings has been reduced. And that also makes it easier for companies to list. That said, I think it will be a bit of a process, you know, for companies to get to that point where they want to start list again. Because I do think, you know, sentiment does drive a big role in whether the companies actually want to list or not.
That's a fair point. I mean, the listing boom of, what, 06, 07 was driven by lots, not just the addition of the LTX board. You mentioned pros and cons. The cons are obviously just it's a smaller market for investors. You know, particularly in a global universe, it means that just there's less for us and perhaps we start to look a little more offshore. What are some of the perhaps benefits of a slightly smaller exchange?
So maybe if we take it back a couple of years and look at the early to late 80s, and we think about the construct of the South African market, it was very much resource driven.
Yeah.
And the top 10 shares, for example, in the investable universe were pretty much mining companies. Now, fast forward like 45 odd years later, and we're sitting with a situation where I guess it's sub 20% of the top 10 investable companies that are actually mining companies. Which means that, you know, you get a Naspers in a single counter, but that gives, you know, investors exposure to a vast portfolio of new economic ventures. And most of those are based outside of South Africa. So you're getting that global exposure by investing into a basket of very diversified companies in the top 10. And at the same time, if you think about the investable universe or the number of companies listed on the exchange, or maybe within the index, and let's refer to the all-share index for simplicity. I mean, it moved from an excess of, you know, 160 shares pre-COVID to around 120-odd shares in that index right now. But most of the shares that has been delisted has actually been on the, you know, the smaller cap or on the fledgling side, which means that you're getting bigger companies on the flip side within the index because of that consolidation that's happening, as well as more diversified companies. So, I mean, in one sense, you might think about that you're getting less diversification because of, you know, less breadth in the market, but in effect, if you get more diversified companies that you invest into. And it doesn't necessarily change the investable universe for investors in South Africa, because the real investable universe for your typical asset manager out there is in the range of maybe 60 shares, at a stretch, 80 shares. So those shares that is predominantly delisted wasn't really accessible for most of the investors in the South African market in any case. There's positive sides to having larger companies within the South African economy and in the investable universe as well.
I take your point. The majority of the delistings have been very, very small. I'm trying to remember when last we had sort of a top 40 delisting, and I can't. One of the trends we've also seen over the last 20 years, which is a good feature for the JSE, is a lot more dual listed, which again goes to your point around the internationalization of the exchange, but also the offering to investors.
Correct. Yes. I mean, that's true. So it's a diversified earnings base for companies. It helps with, you know, the currency volatility that you can often feel from a South African investor if you want to go offshore. And if that's absorbed within, you know, company earnings, then you get a bit of a diversified feel. And at the same time, you know, without having to take your assets physically offshore, I mean, you get that offshore exposure through investing in South African companies. So that's also a, you know, positive angle to it.
We'll leave it there. That's Eugene Botha. He's head of research at Momentum Investments Group. Appreciate the time. That's it for today. We were chatting with Karen Whitten yesterday from Anchor, talking about Adobe, recent results and software as a service. He's making particular points to the market's concerned. I mean, they've certainly got a great business model, but what about AI? How does that work? They've got Firefly. They're bringing AI video. Certainly, that looks promising, but they had got sold off on results. We asked you if this stock was in your portfolio. Half said you prefer the sort of purer tech. A third said watching and waiting. The rest said, yes, a great SaaS business. The show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobokhle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. If you're loving the show, please leave us an awesome rating and a review in your podcatcher of choice. And we'll chat again tomorrow. Capital guaranteed, structured products.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.